Toronto Raptors. They've won six in a row. It's going to move to seven consecutive, and they're going to improve to 49-18. Since January 15th, they're now 24-4, best record in the NBA. And inside the Orlando bubble, they are 3-0.
The players just keep improving, and they really believe in themselves. And I think that's why we're having such good success and a good number of wins.
The pitch. The ball hits a slider down to third. Might be a double play ball. Drury on top of the back to the other corner in time to finish the ball game.
That's a great sign for us that he pitched like that, and that's a boost for our club. You know that he's back in track, and he's going to give us a chance every time to take the mound. He was really good today.
All right. T-minus 13 hours, 58 minutes, and 40 seconds to the broadcast, and a little more than 14 hours till the puck drops on Game 3 between the Leafs and the Blue Jackets tonight. And the Thursday Troll Poll question is already up on Twitter, Leadoff's Thursday Troll Poll. And here's what it says. At Mike Zygomanis says the Leafs are a different team, a better team now, and are destined to beat Columbus. Do you believe him? Yes, no, I'm staying on the fence. We're giving you a free, we're getting you a free option to just sit on the fence and not actually have an opinion on this one. The news is out. Jake Muzzin is done for this series, however long it goes. The Leafs and Jackets will play tonight. They will play tomorrow. Game 5 would be Sunday. Jake Muzzin will not be a part of it. It looks, as Rob Wong said in the top of the hour sports update, as though Martin Marincin is due to draw in. We had a troll poll yesterday where a good 80% of respondents wanted Rasmus Sandin more than Martin Marincin. We'll go over that logic. We had some big, big results last night with some underdogs thriving. Can Les Canadiens put away Le Pittsburgh?
Your French is terrible.
And what?
Sir.
What, are you some kind of expert?
Yes, I am.
Are you? Really okay. You've walked the cobblestone roads of old Montreal many a night at 2 in the morning and learned some new words, haven't you, Zygomanis? Also, Chicago gets it done late against the Oilers. What's up, pal? I mean,
how about last night?
Well, I mean, how about last night, and how about how we feel this morning? Vic Palladian is already chewing down to the cuticles. I come into work, I got to walk people off the ledge. I'm like, first of all, we got a show to do. And then second of all, you got a nappy time at some point today, and then you wake up, then you got to start worrying. But just to be grinding 14 hours out, Zig, I mean, my heels are cooled. You're telling me the Leafs are good now and everything's fine, even though their most important defensive defenseman is no longer in the lineup.
And Marincin is, I couldn't believe the responses for Marincin being in. I mean, what do Leaf fans expect? Who do they want? I understand.
They want Sandin.
I know that, but when you have a guy like Muzzin, big presence on the ice, penalty killer, I it's the logical move. Yeah, it would be nice to have Sandin in, and I talked about it a lot yesterday, how it'd be kind of nice to just get a little bit more offense from the back end when things get a little stagnant during the game. And Leafs played great game 1 and 2, but I mean, you can never have, you know, enough offensive punch. And it's one of those things where you have an opportunity to bring the young kid in. It would be hard, right? Throwing him into the mix mid-series like this, it's not easy to kind of come in for anyone. I mean, even Marincin's going to have, is going to have a little rust on him to start, but I'm curious to see how many minutes he plays. I mean, who else is going to play more minutes, right? That's the next thing. It's like, okay, well, Marincin's just going to kind of come and fill in. He's not going to play the 20 Muzzin minutes. Well, he's going to have to play a lot of them. Which defense right now on the Leafs is going to play 28, 29 minutes.
Well,
it's not going to happen.
Well, the way the pairing stacked up at the skate yesterday, and that doesn't mean, obviously, that they're going to stay that way for three periods, but it was Dermott and Hall, Riley and CeCe, and then Marinchen and Barry. So there will be some Leafs fans taking accelerant and pouring it all over their hair and lighting matches whenever Marinchen and Barry are out there on the ice together. Is there a start stealing baseball terms and applying them to hockey, but is there a higher leverage duo at some point in key moments? Do you move Dermott to his wrong side and pair him with Riley at certain times in this game? Do you go 11-7? What did you say after game one, Zig? If the fourth line is only going to play 3 or 4 minutes, so you're taking all these texts from your boys saying the fourth line needs to do more. Well, if they're playing 3 or 4 minutes, this is a short, condensed series. It'll also be, we're guaranteed, nobody's getting eliminated tonight. We're guaranteed a fourth game, and it's happening tomorrow. So there's also a back-to-back factor here where I bet you Sheldon Keefe, and it would be no different for John Tortorella, hopes his team's got a 3 or 4-0 lead heading into the third period, because then you can apportion ice time and you don't have to lean on guys so heavily. Because these two teams are going to play back-to-back, third and a fourth night and fourth and a sixth night when they play game four tomorrow. But if you're not going to lean on your fourth line, if you're not going to apportion out that ice time, is there value in also dressing Sandin? And then you go 11-7, say in favor of a Spezza or an Engvall.
I
think there's a lot of ways you could go.
Yeah, I don't mind that play. We've talked about that. It's if you're not going to play your fourth line, get your top guys some even more ice. I love when you're up front and you have 11 forwards. It's great. You get that. If you're in those top couple lines, you always get a couple more minutes. So it's exciting to get, you know, lighten the bench, I guess, at the forward end, and you know you have 7 defense on the back end. It gives you that option to, if somebody's not kind of playing or somebody's not going, you can throw somebody else in. And when you have 2 guys that you might bring in and go with 7 defensemen on the back end, and whoever's going, you just play the other, you play him a little bit more than the other guy. It's usual. I like that move from a coaching standpoint, but I don't know. I don't see it at this point. I think they're just going to keep things, because, I mean, games 1 and 2, how good has this team played? They played good enough to win game 1, should have won it. Game 2, they got even better, more scoring opportunities, more from the dangerous areas. And at this point, yeah, I like the fact that they didn't really change everything, right, in that second game. It's easy when you get shut out like that and you overhaul everything. You mix the line. I mean, they did mix the lines up a little bit. They did shuffle a little. Now you're going to obviously have to bring in another defenseman, but they really didn't get away from the game plan that they wanted before the series. I mean, what were people saying before game one or after game one and you lose game when they lost? You had all this time to prepare, and then that's the kind of effort we come out with. I like the way they played. They played well enough to win. I like the game plan. It just didn't go in, and when Columbus gets that first goal, especially late like that, they're one of the toughest, if not the toughest, to play against. And they're the best. For a one-goal team, they're one of the best in the league. So, I mean, it's a good team, and it's going to be hard. It's not going to get any easier. I thought Columbus kind of got a little bit tired in game 2. Torts is saying how bad they played. I didn't think they played much worse or that bad of a game from game 2 to game 1. I know everybody, you know, he's saying in his press conference that, you know, they sucked. I just think Toronto was that good. So I just want to see it again today. Same kind of game. Hopefully Marinson can kind of add some good minutes and Freddie plays the same way.
Well, the thing you know with Torts is first of all, he's playing the game and he's saying what he says publicly in the hopes of bringing the criticism back onto himself, or the old, wow, did you hear what John Tortorella had to say? I think that that's part of it. And then the other part of it is he's trying to rest how this series is framed back onto his own hockey club. Because, Ziggy, you know this. I mean, you played in the league for a long time. You grew up playing the sport. This series will be dictated by the Toronto Maple Leafs, to the good or to the bad. If the Maple Leafs can stay patient and not get frustrated, if Korpisalo does the dance and stands on his head for the first 30 minutes of tonight's game, like he did for the first, 35 or so minutes of game two, and the Leafs hadn't scored a goal yet in the series, if you don't come out of your shell, if you stay defensively responsible, you stick to your game, the Leafs should be fine. If they start opening this thing up, and man, Columbus was the victim of that, the Tavares goal, the 2-0 goal in game two. Once you start taking chances because you have to, that can lead to turnovers that lead to odd man rushes going the other way. And as long as the Maple Leafs can avoid that, they will ultimately dictate the pace of this series, and their play will dictate the result of this series. If they stay the course, I think they're going to be fine, even without Muzzin.
And I want to see, I want to see Marner get going. Whether they win or not, listen, I don't want to look too far ahead, but they're going to need Mitchell Marner to get going. Mitch Marner. You want, because they're going to need him in the next series. They're going to probably need him to finish off Columbus, but once they get past this playing round, you need to get your guys going, right? That's a big part of it, when you look at the whole playoffs as a whole. It's hard. It's going to be tough for this team when you have him or Nylander. Just they can't be passengers. So that's kind of what I want as well. I want them to feel good about their game. They're going to need them going for the next series whenever that is. And it's you got to get them involved. At this point, I want Mitch Marner to stop worrying about making the perfect play, getting in the right spot to shoot the puck. I just want him throwing more things at the net, you know, moving his feet just a little bit more, and feeling good about himself. It's just that's on the coaches a little bit, making sure that you put them in the right situation. I like the fact game two they had more power plays. That's a huge that really gets guys going, gets them touching the puck. I like when you get them earlier. So I like that from the Leafs standpoint. You know, guys are drawing penalties. You know, Kapanen, I thought was great in that end. That's when he's his strongest, right? Drawing penalties, playing with the puck, tough to play with down low. I thought Hyman was excellent game two. Going to have to kind of see him do the same kind of things, get Matthews the puck the way he did for that first one. Good down low. I thought they were a lot tougher to play against below the goal line. Just little things like that, and they're going to be great.
So it's the Leafs and the Jackets, 8 o'clock tonight on Hockey Night in Canada, Game 3, a crucial and pivotal Game 3. And remember, it's a back-to-back situation. These two teams will do Game 4 tomorrow. You don't really want to be down 2-1 playing in a back-to-back situation and facing a must-win. Justin Bourne, Anthony Stewart. Bourne and Stewie for Hockey Central at 8:30 on a Thursday morning. They'll join us at 8:30. Rick Nash, he played for one of those Bruins teams that got the Leafs, but we're not going to focus in on that. He is now the Columbus Blue Jackets special assistant to the GM. He'll be along at 8:10. We're all over the Raptors. Another win in the bubble. They beat Orlando in Orlando. And former Rap Mike James, Leadoff's NBA analyst. At the top of the 8 o'clock hour, Dan Shulman to talk Blue Jays. Hyunjin Ryu was really encouraging last night, and the Jays held on to beat Atlanta 5-4 for their first win in about a week. Remember, they didn't play on the weekend, so the Blue Jays are now 4-5 on the year, and they will conclude their series in Atlanta tonight. A 7:10 first pitch. Wagner and Wilner will have it right here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Shulman and Buck Martinez will have it on the TV side. Let's go around last night's action. The Habs, and I ain't going to lie to you, Zig, I turned this thing off, and it was 3-1 Pittsburgh. It was early to bed for me last night, and I know the Habs scored a goal relatively late in the second period to cut the lead. or midway through the second period, and then tied the game late in the second period, scored in the third to take the lead. They were down 3-1, the Montreal Canadiens to Pittsburgh. I had Pittsburgh winning that hockey game at 3-1. And the Habs storm back. And then later, you've got the Blackhawks taking down the Edmonton Oilers. It is quite possible, as we sit here right now, that the 2-12 seeds in both conferences will defeat the 5 seeds. Now, the Boston Bruins are 0-2 in the Eastern Conference round robin for the top 4 seeding, and as a result, they cannot finish with the top seed. So, if Montreal wins, they won't get Boston as the lowest seed. They won't get Boston in the first round. Is this headed? You know where I'm going with this, right?
Oh, yeah.
Is this headed to the Leafs and the Bruins in the first round of the actual playoffs?
I mean, that would be hilarious, but we're still a long way from there. I know Montreal's look good. Hey, we talked about it yesterday, saying, are they all but done? And I warned you, it's you can't count Carey Price out. I mean, he was good. He I don't think maybe he had the dominant saves that he had earlier in the series, but man, he kept them in there. Weber and Sherratt were great on the back end. They just stuck with it, right? They didn't unravel, right? You get down 3-1 in a game like that. They're getting completely owned. Wasn't kind of a great first for them. They get the lead, though, right? Weber comes out, joins the rush, crashes the net, scores a big goal for them. That's, you know, if you get that, for Montreal, you need everything right now. You need good goaltending. You need your young guys playing good. You need to score the first goal, right? You need all that stuff. And they got that. Not the greatest opener, but hey, you fall down, you know, you fall down early, you get down, you know, you get down 3-1, and it's, yeah, it was almost a turnoff. It was, how many times did Pittsburgh almost, you know, get that fourth and really put the game away? I thought they skated well. I thought Crosby, you know, he didn't get it on the board, but he was excellent. But yeah, Montreal just kind of didn't go away, right? It's easy when you get to that point to just kind of give up, right? Especially a team like Pittsburgh. Montreal's such an underdog. But, I mean, Jeff Petrie again. Huge.
Well, Petrie, but the other one, Jonathan Drouin scoring the 3-2 goal.
Yeah, to get them back in.
And he has been criticized in Montreal over the last week in a not dissimilar way, Ziggy, to the way that William Nylander sometimes wears it here in Toronto.
It's hard because he's a guy, you know what, watching his game, it's just difficult, right? Because when a guy like that doesn't show up,
you always want more. You see the skill, well, you know, it's there.
Yeah, you know what kind of player they are. Drouin is like, it's just when he's on, You don't move him for anybody. It's like I got criticized for saying I don't trade Nylander for Taylor Hall the year he won the Hart Trophy. I mean, when Nylander is on, I don't move him for anyone. I don't care what he makes. I don't care if he's making the 12. It's just like when he's on and playing the way he did his first couple of years, it's difficult when a guy doesn't show up. And they can kind of get to those spots where if it's not going on and, you know, it's what else are you bringing for me when you're not scoring? And Nylander can do a lot of things. He can, you know, he's great with the puck. He's great at pushing offense. He's good at playmaking. He's smart in his own end. So Drouin has kind of the same thing, right? He's got a lot of speed, great vision. He can make players around him better. When he goes dark, you don't know what to expect. And when you're behind the bench, you know, if you're Claude Julien, I mean, it's hard, especially a guy like Claude Julien. You want consistency out of your players. It's, and he's the type of coach where if he doesn't really care if you're a skilled guy. Oh, yeah, what have you done? It's what are you doing for me right now, Claude Julien? He's, you know, no nonsense coach. For the World Juniors back in God knows whatever year that was when I was trying out for the team, Claude Julien was the coach. And what I liked a lot about him is that whoever was playing in any of the games, I didn't make the team and didn't go overseas with them, but just the short time learning from him, the couple weeks at camp, he's the type of guy that he expects your best to all, you know, whenever you're on the ice. And if you're not playing what you do and what you're brought there to do, it's like, what else can you add? What else can you bring to the team? And I loved him as a coach. He's a guy I got to know really closely. And, you know, he needs more to a guy like Drouin. It's just, it's tough when you have that skill and a guy doesn't bring it. So the Canadians need more out of him. And yeah, that's a huge goal for them. They claw back in 3-2 and Paul Byron's shot top shelf. I mean, boom. That was special too. Side there, you know what player really kind of stood out, and I don't know who's, no one really, no one talked about it on the broadcast yesterday, but I love the fact that play Malkin made to Hornquist on the power play. It was a delayed call. Everyone kind of just said, oh, he faked the shot. He didn't fake the shot. When you're killing a penalty and you get another one, you're expecting the team just to give you the puck so they can go in the 5-on-3 right mm-hmm. away. Everybody kind of relaxed, right? Even Weber was playing the offside. When Malkin goes to take a slap shot, you're figuring he's just put it on net and they're going to go to the 5-on-3. I mean, I might have relaxed too. When Malkin did that from a bad angle, you're like, okay, he's just putting it on net. They're going on the 5-on-3. And then he sifts one back door, and it's like, gosh, I mean, like, what a play.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it's such a heads-up play.
It's like the old Dan Marino play in football where he faked taking the knee to run out the clock, had a receiver out in the flat, and he just, from 5 yards out, threw it to him for a wide-open touchdown because the defense thought he was taking a knee. Yeah, if they're going to give that to you, fake him out.
Yeah, you know, it was a great play. I thought he was going on net. I mean, I'm sitting here on my couch. I'm like, okay, he's putting it on net. And then all of a sudden, right back door, Hornquist didn't make any mistakes. Just get off the stick as quick as possible. And yeah, I mean.
Well, and I just because I want to get a thought from you on the Oilers-Chicago game. And the Hawks are the other 12 seed out there in the Western Conference that now have a 2-1 series lead on Edmonton. McDavid did his thing last night, scoring a goal. Draisaitl was there. He had a goal and an assist. 4 goals for Chicago on 25 shots. You know, Mike Smith struggled badly for Edmonton in game one, and they made the switch to Mikko Koskinen. The story, Ziggy, in Edmonton and the Larson for Hall trade and all of that comes up, and they got arguably the two best players in hockey right now, McDavid and Draisaitl together, and then after that, what is it they have? Well, those two guys are enough to carry you in a lot of circumstances, but if you go back last year and before to Cam Talbot, this year in this shortened series, at least so far, I mean, they're down 2-1. They can come back and win. I understand that, but if you don't have goaltending, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And I was thinking of the Torts, the old get me a save. Can't have it's a 75% rule. You can't have a 750 save percentage at this time of year. And that's got the Oilers caught up in it now. They're in the jackpot.
I thought Draisaitl was really good. McDavid.
Those guys are going to do their things, but you got to get a save.
McDavid gets on the board. Yeah, you need goaltending. It's one of the... It's more than that with the Oilers. I feel like there's just when you watch them, it's just there's so much potential. You have the best two players. It's yeah, you need goaltending, but there's just some other kind of mix with the Oilers. I don't know what's kind of missing at times. It just feel like there is a bit of a disconnect. You know, you watch Columbus play, you watch the top teams, the Colorados, the Phillies. It's just a five-man. Every time the puck drops, it's a five-man unit. There's very often the disconnect between the forwards and defense. It feels like There's breakdowns in their own end that don't need to be there. A lot of times it's just compounding problems. One guy misses a check and then all of a sudden it's a grade A. It doesn't need to be like that. The good teams, when they make a, when there's a breakdown, usually there's some kind of layer to it, right? The best teams layer, and it just feels like with the Oilers right now, it's one breakdown and it all collapses. And then obviously you brought up the goaltending. You don't get that, nothing's gonna happen. But I mean, Chicago's a good team.
They're on the come up.
They're good. I Taze is one of the best. I mean, you got Kane. It's they have a forward group to do damage, and we've seen that in this play-in series. Everyone thought that Edmonton was going to sweep. Everybody thought Pittsburgh was going to sweep. And I said, coming on, you know, a couple shows the week before we started here, I said, don't count any of them out. People are always saying, oh, what do you think of this game? I'm like, most games, it's every night in the NHL, any team can win. And I still believe that with hockey, when you have the goaltending position, when you get goaltending, anybody can beat anybody. You can't tell what's going to happen in a game if a goaltender plays well. Doesn't matter who you have on the ice. Guy plays good, and I don't know what other sport where one person can have that kind of impact on the outcome. So I just, it's tough to watch this Oilers team because they're so good, and you get the top two guys in the league. And what's difficult, Scotty, is that, like, when they're playing well, it's like, God, they need some support. But it's just, yeah, there's something missing out of the Oilers game. I'm sure the coaching staff is just frustrated because, you know, they're kind of fresh coming in. And, you know, you have Connor and Draisaitl here. And you're like, okay, let's just put the pieces together. And we have something special. And it's not over yet. I know the teams that get up 2-1. Take most, 80%?
Yeah, it's a high percentage.
Yeah, yep. It's high, 75-80. So
be like being up 3-2.
Yeah.
Same thing in a seven-game series.
It's tough, and now you're getting into the back-to-backs, right? Like you said, Toronto-Columbus, they're going to start getting into the back-to-backs, and that's going to be tough, right? Because now you're going to have some fatigued players. The guys you're used to playing 20-plus minutes, when you have Connor and Draisaitl playing a lot of minutes, and once you get into back-to-back situations, playing 25 minutes a night, it's going to be tough.
Hugh Burrell has jumped into studio. We've been all over the hockey. That's the lead. So we'll Burrell the lead next. Well, the leadoff Thursday troll poll at Mike Zigomanis says the Leafs are a different team, better now, and are destined to beat Columbus. They have no Jake Muzzin. Do you believe him? Yes, no, or I'm staying on the fence. 157 votes inside the first half hour. 44% yes, 29% no, 27% I'm staying on the fence. I consider I'm staying on the fence to lean toward no because people are scared of disappointment. So 56% of people don't have confidence. Hugh, are you weighing in on this poll? Have you voted?
I haven't voted yet, but I will weigh in. I think the... I'm sorry. It's so rude
I'm a busy
of me not
guy.
To get right on this. I think the loss of Muzzin on the defensive end is pretty tough for them, but Columbus doesn't score enough goals for it to really matter, and the Leafs still have by far the better offense. And you could see glimpses of it just starting to tick a little bit in game two. So the loss of Muzzin's tough, but the Leafs offense should be able to overcome that.
Vote on the Twitter poll at Scotty Mac thinks, at Mike Zigomanis, at Hugh W. Burrell, at Fan590. That's where you can find the poll question. We'll track it during the show. Read the write-in responses as well. And as always, you can text to 590-590. Dan Shulman, former rap Mike James, Rick Nash, Justin Bourne, Anthony Stewart, all ahead on the program. Hugh Burrell is here. Let's Burrell the lead.
Good morning, boys. MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred said some stuff yesterday, telling ESPN.com that the vast majority of players have done a really good job of adhering to what he calls difficult protocols. Manfred says the Marlins and Cardinals problems can be traced back to minor deviations from these protocols. So baseball and the players' union have agreed to a number of new safety measures, and these protocols take effect beginning today. and they remain in place for the rest of the season. Here they are. Players and staff must wear face coverings over their nose and mouth at all times, anywhere inside a ballpark, and that includes the dugout and the bullpen. How many times we looked over at a bullpen and guys either aren't wearing the masks or they've just got them up, you know, down below their nose and mouth. Or, of course, if you're on the field, you don't have to wear a mask if you're playing. Home teams required to provide outdoor covered spaces for visiting teams. Players and staff must wear masks at all time while inside hotels, except when alone in their room, alone with their thoughts. Traveling parties must be limited to essential personnel. I thought that was already the case, but maybe not. I don't know. Players and staff must notify their club compliance officer anytime they leave the hotel while on the road. So you've got to get it okayed if you're stepping out. And players and staff are prohibited from visiting bars, lounges, restaurants, and malls. Manfred also said they're considering more testing perhaps every day. So are these new rules going to make the difference that baseball needs?
I'm still stuck on what the St. Louis Cardinals said about their COVID outbreak. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
The virus got in because someone got exposed to an asymptomatic person outside of our bubble or outside of the team. It's like, that is the most vague thing ever. You mean there was an asymptomatic person at that casino or that strip club?
That's the story. Went to the casino.
So we're going to blame it on like a partner or a kid or something at one of the houses. Yeah. I have absolutely no idea, Hugh. I think the non-bubble sports are facing far more significant challenges than the bubble sports. That's why I threw out yesterday my idea of bubbling up the NFL. Four cities, one in the West, one in the North, one in the South, one in the East.
It's a great idea.
Combine the AFC, NFC teams in the like divisions and keep them in a city with a turf field.
Yeah.
So that the grass doesn't get chewed up with four or five games a week and stay safe. I think baseball's challenges are, if they can get through this, I think it'll be as much luck as anything else.
Ziggy, are players going to adhere to this?
It's just guys need to be responsible.
Oh, I know that they need to be responsible, but are they going to be responsible?
Casinos and special clubs, like, come on, guys. Like, do they need to go to those places right now? That's
hey, when you gotta go to the strip club, you gotta go to the strip club.
It's just like it's just do they have to go? I mean, this is not just on the league. I know everyone's kind of mad, and everyone's coming down on Manfred, and it's, well, how could they not go to a bubble system? This isn't just the league. This is on the teams too. Like, you have to be smart about it. If everybody just went home and went to the ballpark and they got on the plane and they did the cities, I think it would be fine. You get your people to deliver your groceries. You're careful with who's in your bubble with your immediate family. It's possible to do it, I think, in the right way without all these positive tests.
Which brings us to this. Been zero positive tests in the NBA Orlando bubble for the last few weeks, but that doesn't mean that everything's all tickety-boo. TMZ caught up with former NBAer Gilbert Arenas, and Arenas said it's not surprising that Lou Williams visited a strip bar, saying guys have told him it's hard being in a bubble.
You're talking about grown men, 85% of them single, and you have them locked up in Disney World, like, nah.
It's tough, so they're having some trouble with that. Yeah. And more so with just their freedom and the ladies and just being out.
I'm just mad that he said he went in for chicken wings. Like, I mean, it's a strip club. I went in there for the fives and you know.
Right. They do have good food, though, there.
I don't know. I would never eat at a strip club.
No, that's true. Yeah,
I don't go to the strip club to eat wings.
A lot of people do, though. It's like a thing.
I can go to Wingstop for wings.
That's
true. I go to a strip club to see strippers.
That's true.
I go to Wingspot for wings. I go to a strip club to see strippers. Yes. But surprisingly, the NBA has done a really, really good job. I think Lou Williams saw the error of his ways. We had a
Don't you think though, Hugh, that we only need to know about 70 or 80% of the entire plan for a league? Like, if there are things that players enjoy or people, bring those into the bubble.
I like where you're going.
We don't actually have to know about.
No.
And I'm not talking about like illicit activities and stuff like that. But look, let's just be real about something here, okay? And I know that in Canada it's different than down in the United States. But I'm going to break some news to you. Some athletes smoke weed.
What?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. Thank you, Greta. I know. I'd say it bothers me too, Greta. I'm with you. How dare you? Yeah. Maybe some of that's got to get into the stream.
Yeah.
But have it be done in a responsible way.
Yep. I think everything's on the table in something like
Disney World's a big place.
And Arenas did have a good point. It's like 85% of these guys in the NBA bubble are young and single. It's tough to tell them just stay in your bubble, don't do anything fun.
I don't think being single matters a lot.
That's true.
I don't really think status.
No, it's true.
Marital status matters all the time.
Let's move along. You've heard of dance-offs? How about a throw-off between two of the strongest arms in the NFL? The Madden 2020 game recently listed Bills quarterback Josh Allen as having a 99 strength arm rating. Or arm strength rating. That's what I meant to say. Patrick Mahomes was a measly 97. Well, how dare you? That got Mahomes' competitive juices flowing.
Man, dude. I mean, obviously Josh has an extremely strong arm, but I've yet to see someone have a stronger arm than me. So maybe we can line up. I know we talked about maybe having a throw off, and then we can really prove who has the strongest arm.
We'll have to make sure that it, you know, whatever the case may be, it's going to a good cause and there's some charity involved with it, because I know he's got his 15 in Mahomes charity and foundation. So we'll figure out a way where we can do this for sure.
I like the charity aspect of it. So I think you could do like each guy gets 5 throws and you donate $100 per yard to the charity of your choice.
So it doesn't matter where the ball lands.
No, this is just a straight how far can you fling it.
Okay.
Yeah, like from your end zone.
Because if there was like any kind of accuracy, you remember the old quarterbacks challenges that you used to see on TV and they had to throw it through a moving tire?
Oh, yeah.
I'm guessing Patrick Mahomes could put it through the moving tire probably every time.
Probably with his left hand.
I'm guessing too. Josh Allen would airmail the moving tire.
But this is purely strength on this one.
Guys, I got to say, what you're rating in a video game matters, and everybody talks about it.
Oh, yeah.
Even NHL, there was some year where I was rated higher than a guy, and I don't remember. I don't even remember who it was. Phoenix I was playing for. Somebody got upset.
Shane Doan.
It wasn't Shane Doan, but it was like some other pigeon like me. It was just two pigeons, and one was rated higher than the next. And it was, and guys get upset about it. I'm telling you, I've seen lots of guys get upset in the room that their rating isn't as high as another guy when clearly they're the better player. So
stuff like that matters, man. It's all ego with these guys. Nobody wants to come in second. And we'll wrap up with this. Former Miami Heat star Dwayne Wade going to host and produce the American version of the hit British game show called The Cube, which has a pair of contestants forced to compete in a series of challenges while inside a small, I guess, plexiglass cube. Highlighting straightforward tasks like catching, throwing, estimating, memorizing, and balancing. It's much more difficult when confined, apparently. So that got us thinking, favorite athlete turned broadcaster or host? Here's a few names. Terry Bradshaw, Michael Strahan, The Rock, John Madden, John McEnroe, Charles Barkley, Shaq, Tony Romo, and I'm going to throw in a guy like J.J. Watt, who has a very bright future in front of him once he hangs up his cleats.
The Rock is my guy on this one. Here's another one totally off the board, Bob Uecker.
Oh, that's right, yes. People forget that he actually played, yeah.
Not well, and no. He'll joke about it, but he made the big leagues.
Yeah.
He played in the big leagues and is obviously an epic broadcaster, Naked Gun movies, like all that stuff.
Yeah. Ziggy, who you got? Who's your favorite athlete turned broadcaster?
Oh, God. I'm trying to think.
I know, we can hear the gears grinding.
I don't know. It's, I mean, Tony Romo, when he comes in, I mean, where was that? What sequence? When he first got on, and I don't even think he was, like, signed to one of his big deals, and he was calling the plays before they happened.
Yeah, he still does the plays.
You know, he still does it, but I feel like that sequence when he first got on the scene was like everybody was talking to. People were calling me and saying, how does he know? I'm like, yeah, the guy's great. He's got good delivery, and he knows what teams are doing. Yeah, it's exciting to watch the game when he's on.
Yeah.
So he's just gonna get better too, right?
Troy Aikman has been phenomenal as well since leaving the game. By the way, Vic, our technical producer, says Anthony Stewart is his favorite.
Yes.
Anthony's great on there.
Goes without saying.
Absolutely.
By the way, Bob Uecker, Major League, not Naked Gun. Screwed that up. I screwed that up. There we go.
Just a little outside.
Just a bit outside. Wild thing. Oh, God. Bob Uecker. Mr. Belvedere. You remember that sitcom back in the 80s? He was a big part of that show, too. Who knew? Must
be in the front row. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
It was like the Miller Lite commercials
or whatever. Yeah. Who knew that we were going to get a Mr. Belvedere reference in the first hour of the program this morning? We are jam-packed today. Born and Stewie, Anthony Stewart, speaking of the devil. They'll be along at 8:30. Rick Nash, now a special assistant to Blue Jackets GM Jarmo Kekalainen. He'll be along at 8:10. Mike James, a former Rap, leadoff NBA analyst, to kick off the 8 o'clock hour. Dan Shulman next hour off a Blue Jays 2-1 win in Atlanta last night. So the rubber match of that series goes tonight a little after 7 o'clock on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Dan will tee that baby up. Hyunjin Ryu looked as good as he has all season in last night's game. The Leafs, the Jackets, no Jake Muzzin. NFL players have until 4 o'clock this afternoon to opt out of the season for COVID concerns. We're all over it. Coming up. All right, all or nothing. It's the three true or false questions. And you got to get them all right or get them all wrong. So how you answer question number one affects how you need to answer questions two and three. Every day we give $100 in Untuckit gift cards away, but if we don't have a winner, the number carries over, and we haven't had a winner all week. So today, $400 in Untuckit gift cards are up for grabs, and Seamus is the one with the chance at them. Hello, Seamus.
Good morning, sir.
Good luck to you, my friend. Ziggy, take it away with question number one.
Seamus, let's do this. All right. First question. Rick Nash is our guest later on, just after 8 a.m. All right. He was taken first overall in 2002. He remains the only Blue Jackets player ever to be taken first overall. Is that true or false?
True.
Didn't seem confident, but you are right. The closest was Ryan Murray, selected second overall in 2012.
All right, Seamus, you're in really good shape now. You got to get the next two correct, and $400 in Untuckit gift cards are yours.
Okay, Seamus, that was a pretty tough question. This one's easy. Mike James, the former Raptor, well, he's going to join leadoff once a week for the rest of the season. Mike James won an NBA title while playing with the Pistons in 2003-2004. Is that true or is that false?
Oh, we'll go true.
Yes. Yeah, he was a member of that championship team.
I'm feeling pretty good here.
Seamus,
I'm feeling pretty good for Seamus. We're staying with the NBA, but we're making it about the Raps. Seamus, last season, the Raptors won 58 regular season games. And of course, that was en route to their first ever NBA title. However, their 58 wins last season is not the single season franchise record for wins. Is that true or is that false?
We got to stick with true.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah.
Seamus.
Bada bing, bada boom.
Good man. $400 in Nantucket gift cards. You're never going to tuck in a shirt again, brother.
Beautiful.
Congratulations. And yes, the Raptors won 59 games a couple of seasons ago. That was the final year of Dwayne Casey as head coach and DeMar DeRozan. Of course, they would go on to lose to the Cleveland Cavaliers in the Eastern Conference playoffs. Congratulations to Seamus. We'll play again tomorrow morning, all or nothing, at about 10 to 7. And $100 in Nantucket gift cards will be up for grabs at that time. Mike James to lead the 8 o'clock hour off. Rick Nash now in the Columbus Blue Jackets front office. Born and Stewie at 8:30. Dan Schulman coming up, the voice of the Toronto Blue Jays on Sportsnet. A big 2-1 win last night. Hyunjin Ryu looked great. The first win in about a week for the boys, but of course they didn't play for 4 or 5 days over the weekend. And we reset the Leafs and Jackets. Game 3 goes tonight. Jake Muzzin is out. It looks like Martin Marincin is in. Should the Leafs go 12-6 or 11-7 and dress Rasmus Sandin as well? We'll touch on that topic and so much more in minutes. All right, Ziggy, we got to, before Hugh bounces, we got to rank our Hughisms. What was it? Are you kidding me?
Are you kidding me?
And Petri dishes.
Petri dishes.
Actually, Ryu isn't, we're actually saying the name the wrong way.
Oh, okay.
Hyunjin Ryu?
Hyunjin Ryu, yeah.
It's actually pronounced with, like you roll an L. There's actually no R in the Korean language. So it's Hyunjin Ryu.
All right,
sorry,
I'm leaving.
Guys. I had to bring it up. If you're gonna talk about it, I didn't want to say anything. But
so it's Hyunjin.
It's Liu. It's not like not a Liu. It's not a Liu. It's a Liu. So
who told you that? Or you just know stuff?
You know, like Frank Costanza. You know me, Frank Costanza.
Thomas
cut from the same cloth.
Thomas Caberle's name was supposed to be pronounced Caberle as well. That's the proper pronunciation, but we went with Caberle.
Yeah.
I'll never forget. I don't think any of us had ever heard of Thomas Caberle. And the Leafs, so Pat Quinn's first year, the last year at the Gardens, or the last half season where they played their opening night, I think they beat Detroit or somebody. And Thomas Caberle played like 25 minutes or something in his NHL debut. And it was Caberle. And it was
Caberle.
It was Caberle. Like, I don't know who he was at that time, but he played a hell of a game and he ended up becoming like an absolute key piece of that blue line for more than a decade.
Yeah. I remember being at a Leafs practice and his dad was in the stands watching. And while this was going on in terms of the pronunciation, I just, you know, screw this. I'm going to go up and ask him.
Ask the father.
Excuse me, sir. What is the proper pronunciation of your last name? He said, Caberle. Oh, perfect. But nobody went with it. They still went with Caberle.
So. Okay.
Yeah.
What did you go with? Did you?
I
did you follow the crowd?
I bowed
here,
to the
you...
masses. Yes.
Okay.
Caberle.
I always feel badly for the athletes who end up having to say, I don't really care how you pronounce it.
Well, it's Brad Marchand now. It's not Marchand.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. That's nice. I just call him the face licker. Because that's what he does, right?
So,
if you're going to do that, you're going to get.
Is it Mike Zagomanis?
However you feel, go right ahead. But no, seriously, guys, it's like Hyunjin Ryu. It's not Ryu. So, moving forward, we'll need to discuss this.
All right, we'll workshop it. We'll hold a conference call after the show and figure it all out. Vic, you say you got Thomas Caberle, and I've screwed the name up, I'm sure, pronouncing his own name. Go ahead.
Thomas Caberle.
There you go. It is. It's Caberle. There we have it. All right. Well, we're solving problems here on the morning show. I mean, this is where it's at. The Leafs and Jackets play a hugely important game 3 tonight, but here we are breaking down athletes' last names and the right way to pronounce them.
It was the starter for the Jays last night. I gotta talk about it.
Oh, and yeah. Like,
he was talking about it on the updates. I mean, I gotta make sure. Hey.
Hyunjin Ryu.
Liu.
Okay, you're doing it well then. If that's the right way to do it, you're definitely doing it well. He looked as good, and Dan Schulman will be along at 7:30. We'll break this down a little more. He looked as good as he has in his three starts with the Blue Jays so far, Ziggy. And I think the key thing for him, you know, he's not a guy who throws hard. He's somebody who keeps hitters off balance, and he does that often by mixing in his changeup in the 80 to 82 mile an hour range. He humped that fastball up to 90 a couple of times, and he was getting some swings and misses. And that was one of the things people were pointing out about his first two starts. He wasn't missing a lot of bats. And I think what we need to remember about Ryu or anybody else is that this has been a quick ramp up. It's been kind of going from 0 to 100 here after the COVID-19 layoff. It's going to take a little bit of time. But that was a highly, highly encouraging performance last night against an Atlanta team that is very, very good.
And how about when he picks off Ozuna at first?
Yes.
Were you not? Come on, like let's be honest about this. When Vlad is there and they're running him down, are you just not concerned, but are you like, man, does he have it in him to get him? I don't know. It crosses my mind where it's like,
who does Vladdy have it in him to what? Yeah. To
Well, it's hard to run down a guy, is it not?
Well. Yeah, I mean, the proper way to attack a rundown is to make sure that the ball is ahead of the runner and that you are chasing the runner back to the previous bag.
Vladdy chasing anybody, I get a little tense. I'm on the edge of my seat. How about that? So when I see Vlad there, I'm on the edge of my seat saying, "Okay, do you think he can do it? Do you think he can get him?" That's just me. Also, how about the sack fly when he came in from third? I can't believe he went. And I want to know, is that his decision or is that third base coach decision?
That's
to go.
Well, that is something that is discussed in advance, and you've got the scouting report. So you're looking at it and you're saying, all right, where are the outfielders positioned? And you have a report on each of the outfielders' three arms and how strong those arms are. And if the ball is hit to X depth, we're sending you. The other thing, Ziggy, is
short.
Yeah, but in a
no-outs
situation, it is different than a one-out situation. In a one-out situation, you're more likely to take the chance because your percentage likelihood of scoring with a runner on third base and two outs obviously is down significantly than if you have a runner on third base with nobody out, you hit a short fly ball for the first out, the guy does not tag up, does not try to score. Well, you've got another opportunity on a fly ball to the outfield to score. Runner on third, one out. So you're weighing all of those factors when you decide to send him.
I think they would have got him. I think if it didn't get cut off, the first baseman cut, who was first base cut him off?
Yeah.
The throw, I think they get him. I think the throw was good.
Well, I'll tell you, the Blue Jays will take it because they needed a win. I mean, it's been a long time, right? They didn't play all weekend, and they got whacked pretty hard on Tuesday night, and so they're starting to get back into the groove. And Randall Grichuk was quoted the other day as saying, "Hey, look, we all expect to be in the playoff hunt. We all expect to be a playoff team."
I hope. Yeah.
By the end of the year,
I hope they are because it's a lot more exciting when they're. They're in the mix.
Well, Nate Pearson is going to get the ball tonight, and if the Blue Jays can win this one, then they'll be 5-5 over the first 10 games. And I mean, that's a sixth of a shortened season in the books. And is 5-5 ideal? No, but it's also not the end of the world. What you didn't want was to be 2-8 or 1-9 right out of the gate, because then you're dealing with an uphill climb that is really difficult. And the New York Yankees continue to roll. I know they split a doubleheader with Philadelphia yesterday, but they're like 9-2. Atop the AL East. And not that the Blue Jays are expecting to win the division. And you can finish third this year in your division and make the playoffs. But what you want to be is in that conversation with the middle of the pack in the American League. And a win tonight would certainly help them along in trying to reach that goal. The Raptors were winners in Orlando against Orlando last night. Their next game is Boston, and they will be the, quote, home team. That's tomorrow at 9 o'clock p.m., and then they've got the Memphis Grizzlies on Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. The Raps are 3-0 in games that mean something in the bubble. They have won seven straight games dating back to late February. So this is a long, long winning streak. They are virtually secured as the 2 seed in the Eastern Conference, but we knew that going in. Mike James will join us at the top of the 8 o'clock hour, and I think one of the things we'll bring up with him, Ziggy, is the notion of respect. And the latest thing that has people going is Kevin Durant, ex of the Golden State Warriors, of course, still rehabbing the Achilles, not performing, not playing for Brooklyn in the bubble. He likes the LA Clippers and Kawhi to beat Giannis and the Milwaukee Bucks in the finals. And it seems like everything comes back to respect for the Raps. Nick Nurse did not win the NBA Coaches Association's Coach of the Year Award. That was a Mike Budenholzer, Billy Donovan of Oklahoma City co-production earlier on this week. The notion of a lack of respect. I don't think this is going to keep the Raptors up at night, but I think the other thing we need to remind ourselves, Kevin Durant is not in the business right now of giving the Raptors respect. He's still pissed about the way that the NBA Finals went down last year. Still pissed that he blew his wheel. Still pissed that he got booed when he first went down. Is convinced, and whether he's right or wrong, we'll never know. And quite frankly, it doesn't matter. But he's still convinced that a fully healthy Golden State Warriors team, him included, Klay Thompson, who blew out his ACL, would have taken the Raptors down. And so I think that there are a lot of chips on Durant's shoulders with regard to the Raptors. This isn't a Canada-America thing. I just don't think Kevin Durant is in the business right now of giving the Toronto Raptors any credit.
No, of course what happened last season stung. I mean, you get beat, you lose your next season to injury. I mean, he's the type of guy where I feel like, I mean, it's not just the Raptors, it's everything with KD, right? I mean, he's just one of those guys that, I mean, he has the long face with almost everything that happens. You see him get into it with teammates. I don't really care too much about what he has to say if he's, you know, negative towards the Raptors. I could care less. But he's a good player. I mean, I think if he does stay healthy, I think the Raptors were in for it last year, but yeah, it's unfortunate he got booed off. I still think that whole situation, him getting booed off, that got blown way out of proportion.
Yes, it did. It did.
I mean, come on. I mean, I was at the game.
I mean, we didn't know at the time the significance of the injury, and I don't think that anybody is sitting there rooting for anyone to get hurt. But it is a natural reaction. It is the product of a highly intense environment, and the crowd is into it. And I'll say this, you know, he thought the crowd was cheering his injury or what have you, and the booing and this and that and going back and forth. Look, I mean, that I would feel the very same way if it was a Raptors player on the floor at Oracle. You know, my take on it is people are kind of lost in the moment. They don't have a sense of the severity of something. I always go back to Game 5, the Blue Jays and the Texas Rangers in the top of the seventh inning. Not the bat flip, which happened in the bottom, but in the top of the seventh inning when that weird run scored for Texas from third base when Russell Martin was throwing the ball back to the pitcher and it deflected off Shin-Soo Choo's bat. And it felt like Rogers Center was going to implode. It's because most people didn't understand in the moment what was going on. Mm-hmm. And after a pitch, you turn, you might take a swig of beer or turn to your buddy, a friend sitting next to you, and just sort of resume a conversation. And you're not actually watching what's going on the field for those 2 or 3 seconds. And then suddenly you look up you think you're in between pitches of a 2-2 game with a runner on third, and suddenly it's 3-2 Texas, and you're saying, what the hell happened? And you're seeing some players throw their arms up and not being sure what's going on. You get into it. Same situation there. Same situation. People didn't know. People didn't know. And I think your first reaction is, oh my God, Kevin Durant is hurt. Well, that increases our likelihood of winning. Golden State is a worse team without Kevin Durant on the court than it is with him on the court. And so I think the cheering was an initial reaction to that, and the booing in general. Well, you boo the other team's stars. I mean, that is what it is. Our Twitter troll poll question this morning ahead of Game 3, Leafs and Jackets. Ziggy says, the Leafs are a different team now, a better team now. Do you believe him? Your options are yes, I do, no, I don't, or I need more time. And we're tracking the results over the course of the broadcast this morning. We'll read some of the write-in responses at Scotty Mac Thinks, at Mike Zigamanis, at Hugh W. Burrell, and at Fan590. And I mean, I look at it this way. The Jake Muzzin situation is a fly in this ointment, Mike. But this is what depth is about. And it sounds as though Martin Marincin is definitely, definitely going to draw into the lineup for the Leafs. The question now is, do they go 4 forward lines, 3 defense pairing, or do they go 11 forwards, 7 defensemen, and throw Rasmus Sandin in there as well?
They're sticking with the 12-6. It's not going to happen. I wouldn't change too much at this point. Is it a good idea to? Do you think it would help if you throw the 7D in there just in case Marincin's has a little too much rest on him? Yeah, it's an option. I can't see it at this point. You want to leave things as much the same as possible. Games 1 and 2. That was a Leafs team where I see them taking this next step. And yeah, with that poll, I really do think this team has changed and has evolved and is playing the way they need to do to win playoff hockey. So I'm excited. It's you leave 12-6. Need Freddie to come out the same way.
Okay, so who eats up the minutes then?
I think Morgan Riley's
going to play 25+.
No. Here's the thing: is Marincin's gonna have to play? Barry's not gonna Barry Riley, CeCe. You're not gonna play them 30 minutes. It's not happening. Like that's the thing about it: is Marincin's gonna have to come in and play big minutes. That's why yesterday when we were talking about
under 18 minutes, Marty Marincin.
I like that's tough to go over under because I actually like that number. I think if they get into penalty trouble, it's going to be over. If they get the lead early and they don't need a goal, I mean, who's he slotted to play with right now? He's slotted to play with Barry, right?
As it stands now, that was the pairing at practice yesterday.
So, yeah, I think he is going to play close to that 20-minute number. It depends on the two things on his ice time are going to depend on, can the Leafs stay out of the box? So, because he's there to penalty kill, right? Like that's the main reason he's there to penalty kill. Second part of Marincin's game is he's gonna have to shut down somebody, right? He's a shutdown defenseman. It's gonna give Barry a little bit more freedom to jump in the play, get a little bit more creative, take a couple more chances. So those are the big things, right? How many minutes can they play, and then can the Leafs get off to a good start? Can they get out to that lead? I think that's gonna dictate a lot of what we see in Marincin tonight.
Well, we're getting some responses. I've thrown this out there on Twitter. Cam says a hard over on 18 minutes for Marty Marincin. I've thrown it out on Twitter at Scotty Mac Thinks. Give me the over under. Marty Marincin, 18 minutes, time on ice in game 3. Well, I mean, we got to buckle up, man. We got to buckle up. And then what are the alternatives, right? I mean, Cody Ceci has worn a lot of criticism this year. And has struggled at times in the first two games. Tyson Barrie, I mean, I think we've exhausted that storyline, and it doesn't even feel like there's much he can do at this point to repair the type of season that he has. Thank God. I mean, thank God Morgan Riley is healthy now, Zig. You know, if this happens to Muzzin and it's April and they're in a playoff series and Riley has been dragging all season long, playing through at least one, maybe more than one injury, they're in a real heap of trouble. So at least their best defenseman in Riley is playing at 100%.
Yeah, it's nice that he's back in the lineup and kind of getting, you know, back to where he was a year ago. I still think there's something there with Riley. I think there's a little bit more. He's played very strong through games one and two, but just from the way I know he can play, there's still another gear, I think, there for him. And it's tough. You can't always find it. Columbus, tight checking team. Tough for the defense to jump in the rush. They don't give up much. There's not a lot of holes and opportunity for that, right? There are certain games, certain teams where, as a defenseman, you can kind of add and you can pick your spots and see. Columbus doesn't give that up. And what Columbus does especially really well is that whenever you do kind of take a chance, they will take advantage of that if you have somebody, you know, trying to cheat for something a little bit more offensively. They expose you big time. So it's not really there, but yeah, I still, Morgan Riley, I think there's another gear there for him to add something offensively, just a little bit more to his game. But nonetheless, he's played really well games one and two.
Well, game three goes tonight and it's an 8 o'clock start. What we do know is that tomorrow's game four, the Leafs and Jackets on a back-to-back, will be at 8 o'clock. The Montreal Canadiens tomorrow at 4 o'clock, that game time has been assigned, will attempt to put away the Pittsburgh Penguins. And by the way, if they don't, there will be a back-to-back in the Habs-Penguins series for games 4 and 5. So that series will wrap up one way or the other by no later than Saturday. The Leafs and Jackets are into their back-to-back situation now tonight and tomorrow night. Mike James, former Raptors guard at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. Rick Nash, special assistant to the Blue Jackets GM at 8:10. Bourne and Stewie at 8:30 for Hockey Central on Leadoff. They join us each and every week. We'll be right into the Leafs-Jackets series, obviously, with them. And coming up next, Hyunjin Ryu looked great. The Blue Jays got a 2-1 win down in Atlanta to snap a bit of a losing skid, and it was the first win in a long time because they didn't play last weekend. Dan Schulman called it on Sportsnet 360, and he will break that game down and look ahead to tonight's game, the rubber match of the series in Atlanta. He'll join us next. Into the Leafs and Jackets a little bit later on in the program. The Raptors are 3-0 in the bubble, and they've got Boston tomorrow night, then Memphis on Sunday afternoon. Mike James, former Rap, will join us at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. The Blue Jays get a win, their first in a while, although it wasn't exactly an extended losing skid. It's just that they got indirectly caught up in some COVID-19 related business and missed their series against the Phillies on the weekend. Hyunjin Ryu looked great. Nate Pearson throws tonight in the rubber match down in Atlanta. To look at that and the general state of Major League Baseball, here's our good friend, the TV voice of the Toronto Blue Jays here on Sportsnet, Dan Schulman. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm well. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing very well. And Hyunjin Ryu, Dan, last night looked great. And it wasn't just five innings generally holding the Atlanta Braves, a very good team, in check. It was that more bats got missed. There was more swing and miss last night from Ryu than almost his first two starts combined.
Yeah, I think he had 21 or 22 swings and misses, which is really a crazy number for anybody, even if you're a power pitcher. And about two-thirds of them, Scotty, were with the changeup. His changeup was great last night. He didn't miss up and out over the plate. He missed down and away. It was just off the zone, at the knees, to the righties. That's where you want to throw your changeup as a lefty to right-handed batters. And that's the Hyunjin Ryu that the Blue Jays signed. That's the guy they were hoping for, who's been so good for the Dodgers over the years.
Well, and I think the one thing that we tend to forget, Dan, is that this is a ramp up for these guys, and it wasn't just a ramp up. It was also a brief shutdown, and now it's a ramp back up again. And Matt Shoemaker was certainly no fan of it. I mean, it was necessary, but he was no fan of it. Talked about it after Tuesday's game. For Ryu, it's just about establishing command, isn't it? Because he's not a guy who's going to blow you away 97, 98, 99 miles an hour with the fastball. Location
right.
is everything for a guy like him.
Everything, right. A guy like Nate Pearson, to use an example, can have iffy command and still probably have a pretty good night because the stuff is so overpowering. Ryu can't do that. And you're right. They ramp up for spring training. They shut down for 3-4 months. They go back to summer camp, an abbreviated spring training 2.0. They get going again, and then they have another layoff because of the Marlins / Phillies situation. And you know, maybe it's something, maybe it's nothing. Shoemaker was on 9 days rest when he pitched. Ryu was on 6 days rest. I'm sorry, 5 days rest, one extra day of rest than normal. And I think it was 100% purposeful that the Blue Jays, when they decided how to structure the rotation coming out of this little layoff, that they wanted to make Ryu as comfortable as possible. They wanted him to have the shortest layoff of any of the pitchers because he is the feel and rhythm guy. And whether that was why he pitched well or not, who knows, but it certainly worked last night.
Dan Shulman, our guest, he is the TV voice of the Blue Jays. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Dan, were you as nervous as I was when Vlad came in and on that sack fly and scored? I was off the edge of my seat. I'm like, I don't know. It's kind of short. I think they get him if they don't cut it off, do they not?
I think they do, and you saw the facial reaction of Ronald Acuna Jr., who made the throw in right field, and who knows better, you know, where the throw's going and how hard than the guy who made the throw. I think they probably get him. That's one of those plays when you're not at the ballpark, you don't have as good a feel for it in the moment. Like, if I'm sitting at the ballpark, I see Vladdy go back. I see him, you know, kind of get into like a sprinter stance, getting ready to go. You don't really see all of that stuff when you're in a studio watching it on a monitor. And I'll admit, I was a little caught by surprise. You know, again, at the ballpark, you have a better feel for how deep the ball is. Where exactly is Acuna standing? As opposed to on TV, you're just getting a camera shot of Acuna standing with grass around him. So sometimes you don't have a feel how deep he is. But I was surprised that Vladdy went. I think he might have been out. Definitely there was a chance if the ball went through. But, you know, good for them for pushing the envelope a little bit. You know, the oldest... It's as old as baseball itself. When you're not scoring runs, you got to try stuff, whether it's, you know, hit and run, aggressive on the bases, something like that. So it worked out for them in the end, and good for him for giving it a try, and good for Louis Rivera for telling him to go.
And you mentioned not being there. How hard is it when a ball goes to the left field and you don't know where it goes? I had a chuckle last night. You watching the game and you're like, and this ball is going out of the park and I have no idea because I'm not there.
Yeah. So there are two that have gotten me so far. One that's really hard is if a guy's trying to steal a base. You just can't see that unless you're sitting at the ballpark. And I'm not complaining. I just believe in being totally transparent with the viewers. Like, we're all in this together, right?
Yes.
And we're all just happy sports are back. So when a guy steals a base, that's hard. But when a ball's hit like that last night, I can't remember who hit it for the Braves. Like, he hit it a country mile down the left field line, and the only question was fair or foul. When you're at the ballpark and it's one of those balls, and I said this on the air last night, in my first year doing games in 1995, I had one of those, and during the inning break, Buck said to me, this is 25 years ago, Buck said to me, hey, if you're not sure, just watch the umpire. Whatever he calls it, you call it. And if he's wrong, blame it on him. And that was some of the best advice I ever got as a baseball broadcaster. But last night, of course, the camera's following the ball. So I can't watch the outfielder. I can't watch fans who are rising up to catch the ball. That's another way of telling where the ball is going to go. Mm-hmm. And so it was that's the first one of those that we've had this year where it was clearly out. It's just a question of whether it was fair or foul. So, you know, we're doing the best we can, and hopefully people are understanding, and I'm sure they are. You know, it's a bit different, but we're having fun with it.
Did you see, Dan, the Dwayne Kuiper call in Colorado, the Giants-Rockies game the other night?
Yes.
I mean, I
yes.
loved how he put that on, too. The ball, did it hit the top of the wall? Was it gone? And about 15 seconds later, the ump gives the old circle sign for the home run, and Kuiper just goes right back into high. That's gone!
Like out of here. That's his,
yeah. Like, just picked it right back up.
We're all going through it. And, you know, it's funny. We're all friends, right? So when the Blue Jays go to play another team before, I'll call or text one of their broadcasters and we'll get on the phone and we'll talk and we'll trade information because it's harder to get information on the other team now as well. And inevitably, at least 50, like we'll trade info, but at least 50% of the call is like, so how's it going for you? Are you guys at the ballpark? Are you in a studio? What's going on?
Right.
And we're all learning together. You know, we really are. But, you know, it is what it is, and I'm just thrilled that we're able to go and do games, and want to thank Tim and Sid for their hospitality, for loaning out the studio for the summer. We're enjoying our stay there, and it's great to be back doing baseball again.
Yeah, it's as great a setup as you could possibly have under the circumstances. Dan Shulman with us on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So I don't. 10 games in, a weekend break because the Phillies had to protect themselves from a potential COVID-19 outbreak that really, thankfully, on their team didn't come. Is there a way to fairly assess any hitter's performance? And you know I'd be honing in on Vladdy or Bo Bichette. Kevin Biggio had a big RBI base hit last night, but has struggled at times here, Dan. In 10 games into a 162-game season, we'd just say small sample size, everybody relax.
Right.
10 games into a 60-game season, the baseball itself hasn't changed. It's just that suddenly one-sixth of the year is in the books, and so that smaller sample size matters a little bit more. Is there any way to appropriately assess anything that we've seen here?
Well, appropriately is a great word. There are all kinds of ways to assess them, but whether it's appropriate is another story. But this is what we do. And like you said, they're 3 weeks away from being halfway through the season. Like, so there has to be urgency. And I think we'll see that in the way that they are assessed as well, fairly or unfairly. I've seen a slightly better quality of at bat up and down the lineup, not markedly better, but slightly better, trying to lay off some pitches out of the zone, trying to have a little bit more of a two-strike approach. That's never going to be a great strength of this group as a whole. Some guys, yes, but as a whole, no. But we're still seeing like the really bad numbers with runners in scoring position, and they've just got to get a little bit better at that. I think they're going to hit. Not to, paint everything as rosy, because it's not, but Tampa Bay, Washington, Atlanta, three pretty good teams and a lot of good pitchers on those teams. And I think the schedule does get easier over the next few weeks. But I would still like to see less chase, more walks, more executing in the moment. You know, we all know they're going to hit home runs, and home runs are great. But there are times, I think, when you've got to think a little bit smaller and execute a little bit here and there. And I don't think as a group they're great at that. In terms of Vladdy, I think we've seen some improvement the last couple of nights. You know, as Joe Siddle pointed out on the pregame show last night, the two doubles the night before were off kind of breaking balls, so-so breaking balls. Last night he hit a 94-mile-an-hour fastball off the wall in right center field. To me, that was a little progress. He still doesn't look like the guy we thought we were going to see when he came up last May, and I'm still hopeful he'll become that guy. I don't know if it's going to be this year, but I think we're seeing some baby steps in the right direction from him.
MLB teams are going to have to start trimming their active rosters, right, down a couple players. Do you see any surprises for the Jays? I know Chase Anderson's coming off. He's ready to be activated. So.
Yeah, he's ready to be activated. I don't think they – so forgive me because I was up late and woke up for you guys, so I don't think they've announced anything yet, but they have to – send two guys out before the games – before the game tonight. They have to get down to 28. If they activate Chase Anderson today, they'll have to send three guys down. So – for me, there's kind of a group of five or six guys it could be. Right now they've got 15 pitchers and 15 position players, so I don't know exactly what they're going to do. But, like, Billy McKinney has options. But do you go down to just one backup outfielder and Anthony Alford, because you've got other guys like Biggio and Drury who can play the outfield if you need it? Santiago Espinal, who I really like, he has options. Alford does not have options. So if you put Alford on waivers, somebody could claim him. And are you willing to risk losing a player in a COVID year where you may never know when you need guys? Like, what if the Blue Jays have a mini outbreak and a couple of outfielders get it, and then Alford's not part of the team anymore? So I think you've got to be really careful about trying to send down guys who are out of options. So to me, it's more likely it could be McKinney, it could be Espinal. On the pitching staff, a guy like Jacob Wagaspak, you know, if especially if Anderson comes on, can Anderson do what Wagaspak has done? Those are some of the guys I look at, unless somebody's going to come up with a mysterious injury or something that's going to put them out for 10 days. But I think the Jays, Ziggy, will be very careful about trying to get guys through waivers. Like the Marlins claimed like 10 people in the last few days after they had their outbreak. So you really got to be careful about these things.
Right, yeah, and I think the Jays lost one, right? Brian Moran went, lefty sidewinder there who had a bit of an experience in Tampa Bay with the Jays a week and a bit ago. From the bullpen perspective, Dan, so shortened season and building guys up, there's no minor leagues, so it's not like a Thomas Hatch can go and throw 5, 6, 7 innings every 5 days. And there probably is not a spot for him regularly in a major league starting rotation right now, and certainly wouldn't be in a normal time. Can Charlie Montoyo keep the Hatches and the Baruckies and the K's of the world in the bullpen all summer long, and the Blue Jays will feel good about where those guys are heading into 2021? Because I would imagine they're not done exhausting the notion of any of those three as potential starting pitchers down the road.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, and I think the answer is yes, because you don't really have any better options. Like you said, there's no minor leagues. If you had a regular minor league season, but Hatch, K, and Baruckie were in this kind of a role, I think there'd be more of a temptation to say, does this make sense? You know, should we send one of these guys down and let them start in Buffalo? But they don't have that real option this year. Plus, they think they can contend for a playoff spot this year, so you need your best arms, even if it's not in their typical roles or most comfortable roles. The good news is if the starting pitchers all start going 6, 7 innings, which doesn't really happen much in baseball anymore, then you don't really have a spot for all of those guys to do that job. But as long as a guy every now and again is going 5 and a few guys look like they're 5-inning guys right now, then you do have room. What I loved about last night, Scotty, is that Hatch didn't come in just to do one inning, and then it was, say, Romano, Dolis, and Bass. I'm glad they've gotten away from that a little bit. They held Dolis back in case they need somebody tonight. There's no reason Hatch can't go more than an inning. They played the matchups. They brought in Baruckie when Freddie Freeman came up as a pinch hitter. Like, it was perfect. It was exactly the way you hope to see it go. And I think they're going to try to get as many pivotal 6th and 7th innings out of Hatch, K, and Baruckie as they can. If there's not enough work for them, then maybe one of them, maybe K, goes down to the alternate side and gets stretched out just in case. But all three of these guys are pretty good. They're more than pretty good. Like, look how well they're pitching right now. They're important pitchers on this staff, and I think they're going to try to give them as many, 1 to 2, 2+ inning appearances as they can over the summer. Worry about next year. They can help them win ball games right now.
We'll be watching on Sportsnet 1 tonight, the rubber match, Blue Jays in Atlanta, looking to win the series. Thanks for this, Dan. Appreciate it. We'll talk next week.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
Dan Shulman, the TV voice of the Toronto Blue Jays, and yes, again, the Jays in Atlanta, 7 o'clock, a little after 7 o'clock first pitch, but 7 o'clock start to the broadcast. Dan Shulman, Buck Martinez will have the call. Blue Jays Central with Campbell and Siddle at 6:30. Wagner Wilner will have the call here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Mike James, a former Rap, on the state of the Raptors. Rick Nash, special assistant to the GM in Columbus, will get the Jackets' perspective heading into Game 3 of the Leafs-Jackets series tonight. Justin Bourne, Anthony Stewart for their usual Hockey Central at 8:30 on a Thursday morning. And Hugh Burrell jumps into studio. It's the public service announcement. Who the hell is playing and when? We all need that reminder, and it's next. Mike James, Rick Nash, Bourne and Stewie, all in the 8 o'clock hour. Hugh Burrell back into studio. Who the hell is playing and when? And this is now like a public service announcement necessity, Hugh.
Yes.
Because
so many
like
games.
9,000 things going on.
All over the place. Different channels.
Different start times.
Yep.
It's all out of whack.
Well, that's what we're here for, to provide this service. Of course, the big one of the night, the Leafs and the Blue Jackets, Game 3. If you want to watch it on TV, it's on Sportsnet. If you want to listen to it on the radio, tune in to 680 News at 8 o'clock. 680 News will have the game. Sportsnet 590 The Fan will join the game in progress after the Blue Jays game, or you can stream it on the Sportsnet app. At 7:30, you can catch Leafs Nation pregame with Gord Stellick and Nick Alberga on the aforementioned Sportsnet app. Always a good listen with those guys. Two other games involving Canadian teams today on the ice. At 2:30, it's Vancouver and Minnesota. That series tied up. It's games on Sportsnet. And at 10:30, the Flames can stick a fork in the Jets. They're up 2-1 in that series. You can catch that game on Sportsnet as well. And as for the Blue Jays, they're on at 7 o'clock tonight. Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Of course, Nate Pearson making his second Major League start. Cannot wait.
Whew. You didn't even take a breath. I like that.
And a couple other games today, hockey. At 4 o'clock, Washington and Philly in Eastern Round Robin action on Sportsnet 360. At 6:30, it's Vegas and the Blues. Western Round Robin action. Surprisingly enough, that game also on Sportsnet 360.
Boston ends up as the third seed. Now, and what if Florida comes back and beats the New York Islanders?
That would make the Leafs the number 6 seed in the East. And who does the number 6 seed play?
The number 3 seed.
And who is that right now? Or the highest that the Bruins could get? Number 3.
Yeah. So
now a lot of things have to happen for that to occur. But the possibility is out there. And 24, 48 hours ago, that seemed like a very remote possibility. Well,
I think what's very true right now is that we don't love Florida. We do not love Florida. At all.
I don't care what
Florida, we do not love Florida. Mike James on the wraps next. Rick Nash, Justin Bourne, Anthony Stewart, all ahead this hour. Leafs and Jackets play Game 3 of their play-in series tonight, a game you can listen to on 680 News and watch on Sportsnet. The Raptors are 3-0 since the resumption of play, and if you take it back to late February, they are on a 7-game winning streak. They will finish, by the looks of it, second in the Eastern Conference, which we kind of sort of knew going in, but they just continue to get the job done. There seems to be a different star each night, and if there is no star, a bunch of guys step up. 6 players had double digits in their 10-point win over the Orlando Magic down in the bubble last night, and Kyle Lowry had 10 assists. Freddie VanVleet had a double-double, 21 points, 10 helpers. Different guys stepping up. This Raptors team is all business. And the league certainly has taken notice of the defending NBA champions the way that they have arrived in Orlando. Mike James is a former Raps guard, played for the Raps in the 05-06 season, and he will be a weekly guest on the program through the rest of the NBA season. And he joins us now. Mike, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
We're doing great. And, I mean, you know, if you look at the Raps 3 games, taking care of business so far down there in the bubble, but doing it in different ways. We've had this conversation off and on, Mike, but this team is all business. And in an industry of which I'm a part, so I raise my hand and accept my share of responsibility, in an industry where we like to pick things apart and find what worries us and what concerns us, this Raptors team doesn't have any noticeable flaws, either in terms of approach or talent on the court?
You know, you think about it, at each position, they're very powerful. You have a great bench. You have a really good starting five that can match up against any starting five in the NBA. And you have a coaching staff with a system that is known to work. They won a championship. It wasn't just all Kawhi Leonard that won that NBA championship, you know, in the past. And it's still the same nucleus minus Kawhi, which means that they have enough firepower. They've always had enough firepower to get them there. But it was always seeming like it was something in the past that always stopped them, limited them. You know, the last 5 years, Toronto has been one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference consistently. They just had problems when it came to those first rounds in the playoffs where they couldn't really get over that hump. And last year, getting over that hump, I really believe it done something to their confidence and it's done something to the way that they play. Winning the championship, it puts you in a championship mindset. When you've never won before, you really don't know what it takes to win. You don't know how to win. And when you win that championship, it's like a light bulb goes off inside your head and says, really? You don't really have to be a superstar to win a championship. You just have to play with confidence, play like a team, and play together, and you're going to give yourself a chance. And I think Toronto is the greatest showmanship of showing what it takes to win a championship, and it's not just one individual, it's a group effort.
Yeah, and I agree with a lot of that, and it's just one of those things, though, Mike, it's like Toronto doesn't get the respect. We've seen KD's comments. I mean, we can even take it a step further, and Nick Nurse, how he doesn't win Coach of the Year this year. I mean, why is that? Is that just the fact that the Raptors are in Canada and, you know, it's the games, all the teams are in the U.S. Is it one of those things or is it just something where, you know, Toronto has to sign that big free agent to kind of get the respect it deserves here? Because it's always something, it feels like. And the Nick Nurse whole Coach of the Year thing is just, I mean, it's baffling to me. How can you explain all that?
Yeah, that's a little, you know, disheartening to see what he was able to do with the team this year and not be able to receive that award. It was definitely deserving. And for them to lose one of the top players in the NBA, you know, the problem was they basically said Toronto can only win a championship with a rent-a-star. And that's what happened last year. They knew that Kawhi wasn't going to stay, hoping that he'd stay and hoping that a championship ring would be the thing to do it. And when he won and how quick he was able, like how fast he wanted to get out of Toronto, almost like, you know, the plague was there or something. It makes it seem like it's not a good city. It's not a fun city. You know, and they didn't have enough. They had just enough to win it last year, and they definitely don't have the pieces this year. Well, guess what? Stars are always made. And Pascal Siakam, he's proven himself to be a legitimate star in this NBA. And stars are made stars are not born, they're made. And I think that him playing under Kawhi last year has taught him what it was to be a scoring leader, to take over a team and take over a game. And he's taken on that responsibility. And guys are stepping up and playing with confidence, coming off the bench, not playing afraid, but doing whatever it takes to help their team win. And that's the difference, is when you have guys that's willing to accept their role and not just say, I'm a star, I'm supposed to get 20 shots. No, whoever's the hottest player for that day, you know what, all the other players have to bow down and understand that it's going to be a team effort and not one individual this year that's going to help, if they have a chance at winning the championship, going to help them win.
With Mike James, a former Toronto Raptors guard, the Raps over Orlando yesterday in the bubble, and they are 3-0 since the return of play. They got Boston tomorrow night and then Memphis on Sunday afternoon, and we are careening toward the actual playoffs, and it looks like the Raps, of course, will be the second seed in the Eastern Conference. You're listening to Leadoff. You know, Mike, a number of years ago now, around the time that Masai Ujiri traded Rudy Gay out of town, there was a near trade with the New York Knicks that would have shipped Kyle Lowry out of town, and that would have truly signaled a full-on teardown and yet another attempt to rebuild, of course, in the post-Chris Bosh era. That trade doesn't happen, and we look at what Kyle Lowry has become and who he has become in this city, for this franchise, and in this sport. Could you have predicted, even prior to his arrival in Toronto, in his days in Memphis or Houston, that Kyle Lowry would be the player and regarded as the player that he is today?
You got to remember when Kyle was having his success, he was an all talk, all star, back to back, multiple years. So he was having the individual success. His problem was, you know, people was overshadowing his regular season with what he was doing in the playoffs for so many years, and how his numbers would drastically change from all star numbers to playing a backup guard statistics. You know, and you're looking at him like, wait a minute, you a $100 million guy. Like, you're not supposed to be playing this bad. And now that pressure of having to play up to his contract, these things, and putting all that pressure individually on yourself to succeed, and, you know, you're failing. You're failing your players. You're failing your team. You're failing the city, and everyone's disappointed in you. And so here it is. You have another superstar come into the city. You know, he had DeMar DeRozan, but at the same time, you got to have a winner and not just a good individual player. You got to have someone teach you how to win. And I think the best thing that that was taught from last year was with Kawhi being on the team. Kawhi taught them how to be a leader. It wasn't not just a leader, but a winner. It's not just about being a vocal leader. It's about doing the intangible things to make your team, to put your team in position to be successful. And I don't think Kyle Lowry ever looked at the games like that in the past. I think he always looked at it from a standpoint of, I got to do whatever it takes individually to help my team. But he put too much pressure on himself instead of looking at it as an individual great player. Now he's looking at being a team great player. And that's a difference, because it's not just about making plays for yourself. It's about making plays for your teammates as well. So when you play like that, it's less force being involved in the game, and it's more of a free flow in the way you're playing now. And I think that's where he's at in his career and how he's on the court.
NBA and NHL have both gone to that system. Baseball obviously hasn't. Players, the talk was, how can we keep the players inside the bubble? So far, I mean, what we know, the NHL hasn't had any issues. The NBA, we've had Lou Williams come out, left the bubble, said he's going for wings. Is this one of those things where it's going to be a struggle to keep guys inside the bubble? And just want your thoughts on Williams going for wings.
You know, one, I think that was a bad choice on his behalf. Next time, put the hat and the glasses with the mustache on, with the trench coat on, if you're gonna do that again, you know. But you have to understand that there's eyes on you everywhere. So even when you think no one is looking, everyone is looking, and you have to be smarter, knowing the money that can be lost, knowing what you can bring into the bubble. You know, we understand that it's hard that they brought back the sport in the middle of the pandemic, because the people, you know, the cities, the fans, the television contracts, all these things, you know, there was so many tangibles going on to bring sports back. But now, as an athlete, you have to be more mature and understand, you know, what's more important right now. Is it a moment of indulging in your, you know, in whatever vice you have, or is it a time now to be disciplined and just say, okay, I'm only doing a lesser sacrifice for a greater service in the future. So I'm only sacrificing seeing my family and friends for a certain period of time. You got to remember, we just came out of a pandemic where we was quarantined, where you couldn't even leave your house. So at least now they can at least, you know, leave, stay in one specific place, stay in the bubble, train, practice. And then it's only after the season is over with, you can go do whatever you want to do. Go to Bora Bora, wherever, or you can even go visit quarantine. You can go visit hospitals if you want to, where the virus is. But while the season is going on, just have a little discipline about yourself and maturity, and just basically say, you know what, for this short period of time, I'm going to put away my vices. I'm going to put away, you know, my little lustful ways, and just focus on one thing and this one goal and one vision, the Larry O'Brien Trophy. And if you focus there, once it's over with, hey, go do whatever you want to do.
You just gave me an idea, Mike. Live Bora shows from Bora Bora.
Yeah,
live
Bora
shows
Bora
from Bora Bora. We'll figure out the time change.
I want to go. Yeah. I want to go. I'll be one of the interviewees over there.
There you go. You'll be live in studio with us. Thanks for this, Mike. We're going to do it each week, and we can't wait. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Mike James, a former Toronto Raptors guard. The Raps have Boston tomorrow night and then Memphis on Sunday afternoon. Games 4 and 5 of the 8-game regular season resumption going on in the Orlando bubble before the playoffs begin. The Leafs and Jackets play game 3 tonight. Columbus will be the home team down at Scotiabank Arena. Series tied a game apiece. Justin Bourne, Anthony Stewart coming up at 8:30. But we are pleased to be joined right now by the assistant to the general manager of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Rick Nash is on the phone line. Mr. Nash, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing very well this morning. Let's just begin with the blanket question of the first two games. Your assessment of the series so far?
Yeah, I thought the first game, we played exactly what we were to play. We didn't give them much, and obviously it wasn't one of the prettiest goals, but it was a goal to get the win. The second game was kind of the opposite. I thought Toronto had a really good game. They came out and, answered the bell after their game won. So it's going to be an interesting game tonight to see how both teams respond to being tied 1-1.
Yeah, and I don't really agree with Torts and his assessment of game 2. I thought you guys played good. I thought maybe wearing down a little bit. We've talked in the show a little bit about how, teams are going to come out. They're going to come out with a lot of energy, but there's going to be some kind of like letdown after those first couple, right? Your body's going to get worn down. You might have, a back-to-back might kick in. How do you see that kind of playing with the teams and, I guess how do you see your club kind of coming out? Was training camp good for you guys? Are guys in shape? How do you think on the mental side of it as well? Do you think your team will be able to stay with the way they played that first game and for most part that second game?
Yeah, it's going to be hard, and no one really knows. No one's been set up in this format. We obviously have a back-to-back with the Leafs, and after being off for so many months, you just don't know how guys' bodies are going to hold up. But, with the style that we play, I think, I think it can complement the situation that we're in. I think one of the big things was we took way too many penalties. And, the Leafs have so much skill and so much talent all up and down and through their lineup. And when you give them opportunities, sometimes they're not going to score. But, every hockey player knows that when you get some good opportunities, you get some movement, you get some confidence on the power play, the momentum carries over to the 5-on-5 game. So, we got to play a smart game, and that's how we've played all year, is kind of a smart one and defense first, and see what happens. It's going to be an interesting night.
Rick Nash is our guest, special assistant to the GM of the Columbus Blue Jackets. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. When you guys, Rick, lost Sergei Bobrovsky in free agency, obviously that's a two-way street, and the player can pull the strings on that. He moves on to Florida. Were you automatically confident in Jonas Korpisalo and then Elvis Merzlikins on the come-up? Did you like that duo right away, or did it take time for the goaltending position post Bobrovsky to set itself? Because I can tell you, Korpisalo was in Leafs fans' heads and may still be to some extent in this playoff series. It's been great.
Yeah, what's interesting is last year was, it was kind of my first year joining the management group. And, we went through the trade deadline, getting Duchesne and Zingle and all these guys, and then the free agency hits, and it's Bob and Panarin. So I kind of felt like I jumped right into it and learned a lot of information early. And I remember, after that summer when those guys signed to different teams, and I was in our management meetings and just saying that we think we have two great goaltenders. And obviously Corpy's you know, somewhat proven NHL number one, and obviously he's making, you know, an all-star bid this year, and now he's looked incredible. But I remember them saying that, you know, there's this goalie in the Swiss League, Elvis Merzlikin, and then, you know, anytime you can throw up a Swiss goaltender of the year or a Swiss championship, you have to be good. I played in Davos in both lockouts, and that league is the real deal. They got some great skilled players. They got some great goaltending over there. So, you know, you lose two really, really good players, and obviously Bob being one of the best goalies in the league. But, you know, when you lose someone like that, it almost gives another guy an opportunity to step up and jump in the spot.
Last game, I'm sure you saw it. All of us saw it, the Torts and Dubois exchange on the bench. First, just want your initial thoughts on that and what was going through your mind. And maybe have you ever gotten into it, a coach that bad on the bench? I know it only happened to me in junior. After that, I never said another word to the coach or even looked in their direction. But just your thoughts on that.
Yeah, you know, they're both emotional guys, and they both love to win, and they both kind of, you know, wear their heart on their sleeves. And, you know, it's in a series of five games when every game means, you know, so much, when you don't really have time to take a shift off or take a period off, emotions run high. And I've played for Torts, and, you know, you know on the bench that in the middle of the game, you know, as a coach, that's probably the closest you're going to get to be as a player of feeling the energy, feeling the excitement. And tensions run high. And you know what? Both these guys care a lot about winning. And, you know, I'm sure everything's kind of figured out now, but it's pro sports. You watch every pro sports, and there's battles within the battle. And, you know, it's a matter of how you respond and how you come out of it.
Well, I've always said, Rick, that it would be great if every Blue Jackets game could be double boxed on TV. Half the screen showing the game and half the screen just a still camera on John Tortorella for the facial responses and all that. You know, he's such an entertaining just personality, and I don't know if he means to be. I don't know if he enjoys that side of it, but it was interesting. We had Kevin Bieksa on the program a couple of mornings ago, and Kevin played for Torts in Torts' 1 year in Vancouver in 13-14, and the Canucks did not make the playoffs that year. But Kevin said on this program that Torts was the smartest coach he ever played for. You played for, as you alluded to, you played for Torts for 1 year with the Rangers in 2012-2013. Did he stick out to you in that same vein that he stuck out to Bieksa?
Yeah, when people kind of ask me about Torts, I know you guys will appreciate this, but he was the most honest coach I've ever had. You always knew where you stood. You know, there was no guessing games. There was no kind of figuring out if you're going to be in the lineup, out of the lineup, at the top of the lineup, on the second line. You always kind of knew where you stood, and he always let you know how he felt. And another thing was just how good he is on the bench at reading the game and reading the situation. So, you know, Torts, there's a reason why, you know, mostly everywhere he goes, he wins and has success. He's that good of a coach.
Up against the clock here, just last quick one. Who for you guys are you kind of expecting to break through? I guess maybe somebody hasn't played well, or a young guy that maybe hasn't gotten the ice that you think he should get so far. Is there anybody that you think the Jackets, maybe somebody we not on our radar that you think can be a game changer for, you know, this next one?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because you know you can kind of go through the lineup, and you know, I feel like a lot of our guys play better as they play as a team and you know, figure out together. I think this is a big time for Cam Atkinson. Obviously, he had the big goal in the first game, and I think he needs to lead by example and take that next step. You know, as a premier player and a world class player and in the league, and you know, he's a veteran now, and he's really got to drag these young guys into the fight. And you know, I know he can do it. He had a great camp, and he's skating well. And he's the face of the Blue Jackets up front. And you know, I'm looking forward to see how he responds tonight.
I don't know how to sign off with you, Rick. It feels like good luck would be probably inappropriate. but hey, we're just happy it's all back. We're just happy it's all back. And I think tonight's a huge game for the obvious reasons. You take a 2-1 series lead in a best of five. That's obviously big. But being down 2-1 and playing on the back-to-back tomorrow, and 3rd and 4, 4th and 6, with the quick ramp up, it's a grind. Tonight's a huge one. We'll be watching. We wish you well, and we'll certainly catch up again soon.
Okay, guys. Take care. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Rick Nash, he is the assistant to Columbus general manager Jarmo Kekalainen. I can't wish him good luck, Sig.
No,
I mean, honestly, it would
that.
Be completely
it's just, it's,
disingenuous.
It's awkward, but, you know, he's a great guy. He comes on the show a lot, and grateful that he takes the time, but... Yeah, it's like you're like, okay, yeah, have a good one today and sign off.
Have a good one, except from between like 8 o'clock and 11 o'clock tonight.
Yeah.
We'll pick the conversation up. It's Hockey Central at 8:30. Born and Stewie with us next. All right, this is a play on the social media madness. What tag team would Born and Stewie be if they were a WWE tag team? And Stewie, the answer to that question is...
An oldie but a goodie, high energy with Coco Beware and Owen Hart.
Owen Hart and Coco. Who would be...
So I think the reasoning behind that, and I was... Oh, yeah. Obviously, I'm Coco Beware because I have the high and tight haircut, of course. That's and I carry a parrot on my shoulder everywhere I go. That's the reason.
I think superimposing Ziggy's face on Frankie, which was the name of the parrot that Coco Beware had, is everything.
It'd be better if it was a pigeon, but a parrot's just as good.
All right. Well, and the dress too, like the way high energy used to dress, the big baggy clothes and the fancy jackets and all that. Justin, you want to weigh in on this? Defend yourself? Are you a party to all of this madness or what?
Well, I feel like we missed a window here while we're talking about tag teams to discuss Marty Jannetty, who may or may not have confessed to murdering someone on Facebook yesterday. So, I don't know. I feel like that's a relevant topic right now.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
I do not feel bad now that Shawn Michaels kicked him through the glass of the barbershop window back in the day.
Was the best. Just the best. And Bobby the Brain Heenan's commentary. I knew he was going to do that. Oh, so good. Long time ago. All right, boys, we actually have business to get to tonight. Big game. Game 3 between the Leafs and Jackets. We also got to talk about the Habs and Penguins and the Hawks and the Oilers. What's going on with the 5-12 matchups in both conferences? Let's start with the Twitter question I threw out there. Jake Muzzin is, of course, out of the lineup, done for the series against Columbus. Marty Marincin, it seems, is going into the lineup tonight, so we'll play the over-under game. Over-under 18 minutes time on ice, Marty Marincin, what you got?
Well, I'll go ahead and say I'll take the under just because it feels like a very Babcock thing to bring in a guy like Marincin and then have him play like 28 minutes or something like that. I feel like Keith is going to be a little more careful with his...
Justin, go. Did Justin lose his high energy? We got him back. Stewie, pick it up.
That's what happens when you. That's what happens when you mention Babcock on. I'm gonna say under because if it hit, it is the over. That means the Toronto Maple Leafs are in great penalty trouble because he's mostly known for his killing. So I'll peg him probably into the 14 to 15 minute range. But let's not forget he's a veteran NHL guy and. Usually when you don't notice guys in a game, that's usually a good thing. So for me, he's a steady Eddie guy. He keeps it simple. He can make a pretty good breakout pass, but you don't need spectacular. All you need is for him to go in there, block some shots, be a guy, and don't get caught, you know, with his bad reads behind the net like he's been doing this season. So for me, I don't think if you don't notice him, that's a good thing, and I think he's going to have a good game tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's – I said the same thing earlier, Stewie. It's going to depend. If they get into big penalty trouble, yeah, he's going to be playing close to that 20 minutes. But the case I was making to Scotty earlier and yesterday a little bit is that who's going to come and play 30 minutes for the decor? Like, who's going to play more? That's the thing. It's they're going to have to put him on the ice. And if he's playing with Barry – I mean, unless the Leafs get a ton of power plays again, he's going to be playing a lot with Barry. He's going to get a lot of minutes. So, yeah, that 18 minutes is a good mark, and they're going to need him. Whether it's 10 minutes or 20 minutes, every minute you play on that back end against Columbus is gonna matter. Two guys I want to ask you about actually is who've been kind of silent so far have been Nylander and Marner. I wanted your opinion on it. I kind of feel like Marner's just a little bit better in game two, but kind of looking for that extra pass, looking for the extra play. And I'm trying to explain to Scotty how guys like them, they have to get it going. They have to taste it. Usually it's the power play that gets guys going. But, you know, you need your cookies, right, as you like to say. How else can they be kind of effective in a series like this? It's so tight checking, right? Like, what else? They have to bring something else if they can't get on the scoreboard, right?
Yeah, well, Ziggy, you know, game 1 to 60, you know, is globetrotter hockey. You can globetrot it up, score the highlight reel goal. But in the playoffs, it's a totally different beast. And, you know, when I see Marner and Nylander, there's no reason why they can't do it. You're seeing Aho and Svechnikov and Slavin and all these other guys on Carolina really stepping their game up and taking their game to another level. They're young guys. They haven't had a lot of experience, but they're really buying in. So we were talking about Florida yesterday, and I say there's the elbow room factor where guys are just not motivated with that South, you know, Florida lifestyle. So for me and Ziggy, you know, you got, you know, 5 vacation days and you disappeared off the face of the earth. Could you imagine if you had a $12 million bank, you know, draft statement coming into your account on July 1st, how motivated would you really, really be? And being a National Hockey player, it's tough. It's tough to really get motivated when you're making that amount of money and really showing up in playoffs when it counts. It's a different breed. It's a different breed. It takes experience. So I think that's part of it where they're young. They're learning how it takes to be pros. But at the end of the day, when we do a, I hope it's not an autopsy. I hope it's a dissection of this playoff. These guys have to step up. They have to step up. They're the highest paid players. And say what you want. The GOAT's not going to save this series. Kyle Clifford's not going to save the series. It's going to be the big four making the most amount of money. They have to step up and earn it.
Justin, you want to jump in on that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. The Mitch Marner problem is one. You know, I wrote about it yesterday on sportsman.ca there. It's just, he can do so much for this team, and he's someone that can exist in these tough games against physical teams and still be effective offensively. The issue is just that right now he seems to be unable to finish his plays, to make that play at the end of it, to sort of, you know, the last minute thing that finishes where he puts the puck in the net or makes the backdoor pass. And a lot of that does come with rust. I'm kind of hoping for a guy like Mitch Marner that comes off here with a, you know, couple games under his belt. He starts to finish those plays, and the Leafs can start to score. Because, you know, as those offensive guys go, that's pretty much as far as the Leafs are going to go.
What did you guys see in the Habs-Penguins game last night? I mean, I shut the thing off a little before the halfway mark of the second period, 3-1 Pittsburgh, thinking, oh, I can sneak off early to bed tonight. And you know, wake up tomorrow morning and the Penguins will have a 2-1 series lead, as I think we all believe they should, especially because Montreal, thinking they were going to miss the playoffs, traded a couple of guys out of town leading up to the trade deadline back in February. And yet we wake up this morning and the Habs have stormed back to tie the game before the end of the second and then gone on to win it in the third period. This is stunning. Carey Price is doing his thing. Are you guys stunned by this? Are you surprised by this? I don't know how to predict anything here. I think it's all a crapshoot. because it's impossible to know how teams are going to perform after such a long time off.
It is. And in general, I feel like in hockey, there's so much parity. Any team can beat any other team on any given night. But I can't think of two teams that I saw at far, you know, more polar ends of the spectrum. You know, Pittsburgh, I was laying money on them to win the Stanley Cup. I thought, you know, once healthy, look out for this team. And Montreal was already not very good and then sold off, you know, Cousins and Thompson and Kovalchuk and Scandella. And I just didn't think there was anything there. So in games that really mattered, when teams, you know, teams usually step it up and show who they really are. The fact that, that Pittsburgh hasn't found a way through twice now, I've been as surprised as I've been by any results in hockey. I mean, I couldn't see Montreal beating them once, let alone twice. So to think that they could do it a third time, I still can't see it. But boy, it certainly feels more likely now than it did just a few days ago.
Yeah, Montreal Canadiens for the Stanley Cup. Let's go, baby. Offense wins, you know, games, but defense wins championships. And Montreal's defense and Carey Price have really been stepping up. We saw Jeff Petrie just sort of, you know, put one top shelf, to put the game winner, eventual game winner. But I think for me right now, Pittsburgh's defense is really struggling. Jack Johnson was a -3 last night. And then say what you want, you know, Murray didn't get the job done in net, and you need your goaltending to step up. So I think with Pittsburgh, they got to have more of a killer instinct. I know they're up 3-1, but they had a couple power plays where they didn't really, you know, put their foot on the gas and really get Montreal out of the game. So when you have Carey Price in net, you got your defense stepping up. Toronto, Montreal's, you know, they're a little bit smaller, but they're fast, and they can, you know, transition the game pretty, you know, fairly quickly here. So you can't really count them out. You really got to, like, demoralize them. You got to come out in that first period and let them know, hey, guys, you're not doing well tonight. It's a bad game for you guys, and really get them out of the game. But with Carey Price, you know, they can go. They can go some places, I'll tell you that.
I want to talk about the West quickly. I already know what Stewie thinks of the Edmonton Oilers, so we'll start with Justin to get a more...
Well, wait, though. No, Stewie, they're still going to win the Cup, right? The Oilers? No.
Well, wait a second. We'll get to...
Yes.
He'll have his
okay.
His
okay.
Say at the end. All but right. We'll talk with Sir Justin. Can they pull this off? And I mean, what's wrong with the Oilers? I don't think I've gotten so many texts from friends on asking me, how can you not win with the best two players in the world? And I'm running out of excuses for them, because I said they are a great team. You know, they've got the stars, they've got the defense. Goaltending obviously is always going to be an issue, certainly right now. They have the management team in. What's missing for them? Because for me, it's like it's a disconnect, right? I just feel like one simple mistake and it's like everything falls apart. I just want to know what you guys think. We'll start with Justin.
Yeah, well, just you look at the game so far and the goals that have been scored. You know, I think there's been up to 9-9-7 goals, something like that, over the three games. It's been, I think, actually even higher than that in the first game. So it hasn't been the sort of the lockdown defensive hockey you would anticipate, where having the best two players in the world will help you find that one or two goals. You know, I think of the Columbus-Toronto series. You know, when it's tight like that and you have the best players, you like to think that your best players are going to find the only goals in the game and you'll come through. But right now it's like shinny where, you know, this is no offense to this one particular player, but I played summer hockey with Mitch Fritz. Mitch Fritz is, you know, a big fighter in the NHL. And we skated with, I mean, Duncan Keith and Shea Weber and some of the best players in the world. And some nights Fritz would score 6 goals. That's just shinny hockey. And if you open it up and don't play defensively tight, anyone can score. And that kind of feels like what's happening to Edmonton. The game isn't tight enough. It's loosening it up so anyone can score. And Chicago's got players that'll make you pay.
Yeah, the Blackhawks are like the, you know, that heavyweight boxer, you know, boxing at 45. Like, you could beat them if you really, you know, play to your strengths, but they still got that knockout power. And that's what I was worried about going into the series was, you know, they have the experience. They have guys that have won 3 Stanley Cups. They have Crawford. They have Taze and Canes. Those are guys that can really, if you just let them do what they want, they can take over games. And obviously you can see last night with Jonathan Taze scoring 2 goals. So for me, you know, other guys got to step up. We talked about primary, secondary, offense provided by Draisaitl and McDavid. These tertiary guys got to step up, and guys like Cassian, you're supposed to take over the series, and you're at 6 minutes last night, not good enough. So I still got them for the cup. I'm not gonna be a turncoat. I'm not gonna be like
Sergeant Slaughter,
like Shawn Michaels. I'm not gonna be like Shawn Michaels turning on Marty Jannetty, but they got to get it together, and it's goaltending. Like, what surprises me right now is they're usually a highly defensive team, and you have that 3-2 lead. That's usually 9 times out of 10, that's a done game. So playoff hockey, it's different. It's a different beast, as I mentioned before. But at least we can say it's entertaining, guys. It's good hockey. And I know Ziggy, who's got to get up at, probably 2:20 in the morning to go for his 30-mile run, probably was sleeping. But I thought Edmonton was going to win that game hands down with a 3-2 lead with 6 minutes to go.
You want to defend yourself, Sig, or are you just take that one?
It was a 25-mile run, not a 30-mile run.
And I was digesting kale at the same time. There you go.
I got nothing for that.
Where's the ad lib?
That's all bang off.
Stewie, Ziggy ain't cutting the promos in your tag team. That's all on you, pal.
Ziggy, what do you think?
Boys, it's always fun. We'll do it again next Thursday. Let's hope we're previewing or at least maybe even underway a Leaf 7-game playoff series. And if you look at it now, the Boston Bruins can finish no better than third seed. And what if Florida comes back and beats the Islanders? And what if the Habs finish off the Penguins? That would leave the third-seeded Bruins to take on the second of the four seeds that advanced from the play-in series, which would be, in that scenario, Toronto. So... Who the hell knows where it's all going? But a big one tonight. We'll be watching. We'll be listening. Thanks for this.
Thanks, guys.
Go Leafs, go.
You bet. Justin Bourne, Anthony Stewart, high energy. We'll get Hugh into studio. One more thought on the Leafs game tonight. Get you set for good show coming up. Good show coming up at the top of the hour. It's Maple Leafs game day. 680 News is where you can listen to the start of the game, and then Sportsnet 590 The Fan will pick things up when the Blue Jays Atlanta game ends, and our coverage of that begins at 7 o'clock here on the radio station. Game 3, series tied a game apiece. No Jake Muzzin. Marty Marincin expected to draw in. I've got the over-under on Twitter, 18 minutes. I'm going with under.
I'm taking the under too. If he's playing more than 18 minutes, I don't know if that's a good sign.
The minutes need to be filled, right, Zig? I mean, somebody's got to play. I mean, and as you say, they've got a guaranteed back to back. This isn't a survival game tonight. It's not an elimination game. You're going back to back game 4 tomorrow. It's not like you can ask a Morgan Riley in a quick ramp up to play 30 minutes. I guess you can, but that doesn't guarantee anything for tomorrow night.
Yeah, it's a tall order, but. I'm not too concerned. I think that Marincin can come in, do the job, and what I'm looking for is to not notice him tonight. Like, I want to come on tomorrow. If I come on tomorrow and we don't talk about him,
perfect.
They're going to win.
Because he hasn't yacked one up. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm more concerned about. I'd rather that than come on tomorrow and say, wow, what a PK play. What a shot block he was making. Wow, did you see him shut down Atkinson? Like, I want to come tomorrow and just be like, he kind of blended in, didn't really notice him, and the Leafs will be up 2-1. That's kind of what's going to happen.
Predictions. I want them, and I want them now.
Leafs will win the hockey game.
Just, you know, I'm a score. Just
3-1.
3-1?
Give you a 3-1 score.
Ziggy?
You know how I love to call predictions.
I'll go one step further. And I know the math in a best of five, you go up 2-1. But because of the back-to-back situation, tomorrow night will be the fourth game in six nights. The Leafs win tonight 3-1, and the winner of tonight's game wins this series.
Interesting. Okay.
Interesting.
So if the Leafs lose tonight, it's not going to be a happy Friday for me tomorrow morning.
I think the floodgates open. I think the Leafs win this one 5-2. I don't think it's close. I think that offense started to wake up a little bit last game, and they finally got to Korpisalo, and just mentally that was such a weight off. Now they have to deal with the absence of Muzzin, but like I was saying earlier, I think that offense will make up for any kind of defensive deficiency.
Yeah, I think they can score. It's going to come down to is Columbus. Are they out of gas? With this long layoff, if they're out of gas, that's not a knock on them. That's one thing. And if they back down at all, saying, wow, they just lost their toughest, most physical defenseman. And if Columbus lays off a little, the floodgates will open for the Leafs. Watch them score 4 or 5 goals.
We'll break it all down. 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. Go Leafs, go. Good show's next. Le Pittsburgh.